Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Swinger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast and leave us an awesome five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk about some recent news headlines and hopefully provide some insight, analysis, and practical applications that you can take into the office to help you protect your organization.
And as usual, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours alone, do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
Worst kind of swap party is a SIM swap party.
All righty. So the first article we're talking about today is T-Mobile says the new data breach caused by SIM swap attacks. And this comes to us from Bleeping Computer. There was a recent breach of several T-Mobile customers. T-Mobile came out and said that this small number was compromised due to the SIM swap assignments to mobile phones on their accounts may have been illegally reassigned or a limited amount of information on their account was viewed. So SIM swapping is also known as SIM hijacking, which makes it possible for attackers to take control of a target's mobile phone by tricking or potentially bribing someone at the mobile phone carrier, you know, a customer service rep or somebody at the mobile phone carrier, to reassign the numbers to a SIM, which is controlled by the attacker. So they don't even have to have possession of the individual's phone or anything else, really, of the individual. If they can convince customer service or someone at the mobile phone carrier to assign a phone number to the SIM card that they have.
Yeah, they basically just need their name, right? Like if they're bribing someone to do it, because if they're trying to trick them, they probably need the name and the phone number both. If they're bribing somebody, they just need the name.
There's a couple of different ways they could go about it, depending on what it is, because it's also possible for them to take control of the account if they have the PIN number associated with the account.
But how would they get that? Like that, this is one of those things that I've thought about before, because it frequently comes up, and you're going to talk about this in a minute, but it frequently comes up in relation to crypto, because most people that do crypto use their phone as their second factor. So if you can switch over the phone number, then that makes it easy to, you know, steal somebody's crypto. And I've always wondered about this, like, how do you figure out that someone that's got so much crypto, how do you figure out the name that's attached to that, unless they're really public about it? And then from there, you've got to figure out their phone number too. Like, my name is not that uncommon, it turns out. I'm kind of surprised. If you Google my name, I don't even come up in the first page. I haven't even looked to see how many pages you have to go back to find me, but it's not. Like, it just seems so weird to me that you've got to, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through for this.
Well, if there's been a breach at the phone carrier, that may have been exposed. I actually didn't think to look back to see if I could find one of those recently. Although T-Mobile, back in February of, I guess we can call it last year now, had a compromise where someone was able to get access to an application, one of the customer service applications that managed this, and they were able to get that PIN out of that app. So I think this is probably, you know, if you're going at it from the attacking the PIN perspective, it's probably a matter of a data breach where you're going to get that information. Because I'm not sure that there's can really brute force that. It really would depend on the where the carrier is asking for that PIN, and if they have controls in place to, you know, block access or something after so many failures.
I'm just saying that having some operational awareness, I think, mitigates this attack quite a bit. Because even if they do pull your information out of, you know, T-Mobile, and there's some kind of a breach of your information, they don't know that you've got crypto. They don't know what exchanges it's in. They don't know where it is. They don't know what bank account you have. Like, I mean, I guess unless they're doing credential stuffing, but then they have to have the credentials from somewhere else too. They've got to match up a whole bunch of different things.
Well, the only thing that they have to match is, well, maybe not the only thing necessarily, but
yeah,
a lot of times email
I just looked. I'm in the fifth page of Google search results and I'm not on there. Just because they got a Matthew Keener, they still have to attach it to an email address. They still have to attach it to the right email address because there's multiple Matthew Keeners out there. Like, this all seems like a lot of work. I mean, and for stealing large amounts of crypto, it's probably worth it if you're stealing a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of crypto. a couple million. Sorry.
I think the main thing is the attachment to the email address, because the email address is often used as the username for, you know, other accounts.
Yeah. And again, like if you look, you're going to talk about this, and I apologize for jumping it. There's been a whole bunch of T-Mobile data breaches in the past. So that makes it a lot easier for them to connect to the email, you know, because now you've probably got address information. You've probably got the email address with it. And now maybe you can start doing some correlation if you know like what part of the country they live in, or you have their email address from somewhere else.
And regardless of how hard this seems, in a quote in the article from a T-Mobile employee, or I'm sorry, not a T-Mobile employee, from the company, a company statement, unauthorized SIM swaps are unfortunately a common industry-wide occurrence.
Yeah. So obviously I'm missing something. Like, all right, I'm smart enough to admit that I'm missing something here.
I wouldn't say you're necessarily missing something, as you know, you don't do this, so you don't have experience in how easy it is.
Yeah. It's just looking at it from the outside, it seems like connecting all the dots and connecting all the information seems like a lot of work, which again, if you're targeting somebody with $100 million in Bitcoin, like that amount of work is worth it. But right. If you don't know who you're targeting, if you're just kind of randomly being like, oh, you know, here's some data from the T-Mobile breach, let's start fishing around and seeing if we can figure out, like that definitely, you want to walk in there with a plan, I think.
Yeah, and I think you're right in that case, because in both the February breach and this recent breach, it's a small number of people, so it's much more targeted than you know, a broad data breach where someone might automate an attack of some kind. So I think you're right in that, you know, once they have this data, they have to do research to find out who their targets are going to be. So that target base gets smaller.
Maybe that's worth it. Because I was thinking, so if you're trying to hack somebody's crypto, you find someone that's got $100 million in Bitcoin, you do your research then to figure out who they are. And then you only have like three carriers to go to, you know, T-Mobile, Verizon, Sprint. Or I guess they could be in one of the smaller ones. But what about taking it from the other direction? And if you've got their information from T-Mobile, you've got their phone number, and you can do the SIM swap if you need to. Maybe the next step is they start phishing them with, you know, various types of, like, here's a Wells Fargo email one day. Here's a Chase banking email another day. Here's a, you know, Coinbase another day. Maybe they just put them on the list and they just kind of keep it in their back pocket until they respond to one of the phishing emails.
Man, it's some point of when they do their research. Do they do their research after they've identified the target, or before they've been identified the target and have the SIM data?
I guess it depends on how they get the SIM data. Because if they're bribing people in the company, then they can do it to anybody. So they could send out all kinds of, oh, you know what? That's probably what it is. This has probably just been folded into a part of their regular phishing operations. They've got a regular partner in T-Mobile. So whenever a T-Mobile number comes up, and this is only about T-Mobile, but I would bet the same thing in Sprint, the same thing in Verizon, they've got a partner who gets a cut every time they do this. And then they've got big ass databases on the back end that just kind of combine it. Whenever somebody gets phished and that email comes up, they're like, oh, they've got T-Mobile. Let's go reach out to our buddy here at T-Mobile and, you know, break into their account or whatever.
That's possible. I'd like to think that T-Mobile is doing some kind of work on the inside to say, you know, it's funny, every time someone gets a complaints about a possible SIM swap attack, you know, Bob is the guy who changed the SIM on it.
Yeah, that's assuming that they're auditing that, which I would hope they are. Certainly have the technology to do that.
Yeah, so that may be a poor assumption on our side.
Yeah, it could be a shared account or something, because Lord knows that never happens.
Oh, never.
It could be stolen credentials. Maybe he keeps using Anna's credentials and Anna gets fired, and then he starts using Laura's credentials and then Laura gets fired, and then he starts using Bob's credentials. Like, I don't know.
Man, you're starting to sound like a spy novel.
You know, but you know the complexity of some of these hacks? Like, is this not a spy novel? They're having someone at the phone company change their phone number for them so that it goes to your phone instead. Like, that is kind of spy novel-esque.
That's true.
All right, I'll stop going off on tangents.
But anyway, the reason this is obviously dangerous is if someone gets your phone, then they can have like Matt was talking about with the multi-factor authentication sent to the phone via SMS versus, you know, the time-based token to seal the credentials. And that can lead to being able to log into bank accounts, steal crypto, steal other passwords from other accounts, and, you know, a lot of other nefarious things that you can do once you have control of someone's phone. And, you know, we were talking about the having compromised the T-Mobile PIN. So for T-Mobile, your PIN has to be 6 to 15 non-sequential numbers and can't be, and they have a list on their site of what that number can't be, including your social security number, the account number, you know, things of that nature as well.
10 to 15 digits? Jesus. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could remember a 10-digit PIN.
Well, that's why you have a password manager. Yeah, so I'd say the bottom line, at least for this article, is it's possible for you to be the victim of this, but this is probably more likely going to be a targeted attack, which reduces your likelihood of being attacked by this. One thing I would say that's clear because of this problem, if you can choose between an SMS-based multi-factor or time-based token, go with the time-based token every time.
Yeah, didn't some government agency recently come out and say that SMS should not be considered to be a two-factor anymore? I think like CERT or somebody did.
That sounds familiar, but I don't recall specifically. I think it may have been NSA, actually.
Either way, yeah, they've definitely been. Although I've noticed, as I've been looking at more crypto recently, a lot of crypto websites only allow you to use. They don't allow you to use, or at least they don't. Not by default, they use SMS.
Yeah, it's quite frustrating. I can see why they would use SMS, because you have a broader base of people who understand how that functions, and it's easier for them to use. Mm-hmm. But at least offer the time-based token in addition to the SMS.
Yeah.
So that those people who don't want SMS and want the better time-based token and know how it functions and works and everything can choose that over the more vulnerable SMS. It's frustrating when you go to a site that offers multi-factor but only offers SMS.
So I've been playing a lot of Cyberpunk lately. So this one kind of hit me right in the feels. The title is Facebook Disrupts Operations of Seventh Surveillance for Hire Firms. This is from Bleeping Computer. Summary is Facebook has disrupted the operations of seven different spyware-making companies. This is quoted from the article. Blocking their internet infrastructure, sending cease and desist letters, and banning them from its platform. Each firm does more than this, but specifically specifically for this article and for what Facebook is talking about, they were maintaining accounts on Facebook as part of their intel collection efforts. Report also calls out they were also maintaining accounts on Instagram, WhatsApp, Twitter, Flickr, other public and dark websites. And these accounts were posing as politicians, environmental activists, journalists, a bunch of different things. And they were using social engineering as well to try and join closed communities, which of course should not be that much of a surprise. So I have a couple of discussion points on here. My first thought was, how much does it cost to put this kind of surveillance on individuals? Like, how affordable is this? Is it something that individuals can do? Is it something that companies can afford, or can only nation states afford it? Because it's, you know, like $1 million per person. A lot of companies can afford that too. I never did find a number, but if you go deeper than the article and you go in the report, they did find that there was a wide range of customers, which included private individuals, businesses, and law firms around the world. So these companies were catering to all of the above in terms of surveilling people for them, which is really interesting, which indicates to me that it's probably not that expensive to put surveillance around somebody. I mean, it's probably out of reach of your average middle-class person, but you know, your multimillionaire could probably afford it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all spying on their ex-wives and whatnot.
You know what? I didn't think of that as a use case, but yeah, that probably is.
You know, but the whole underlying thing on here is, why are they doing spying and intelligence collection on Facebook? Because Facebook has all the data.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me. They mentioned this is also on WhatsApp, which is also owned by Facebook, Twitter, and a bunch of other places too. So Facebook's really just kind of the first person to come out on this.
Right. So it's really they're, and this is my perspective on it, is they're talking about these organizations are doing the surveillance, but not really. You know, Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, they're doing the surveillance. These companies are simply acquiring the already surveilled data from these organizations. So it's a, I think it's a miscategorization of it.
So the, although they do add the spyware down the road, but yeah, in terms of the open source social media stuff, The surveillance companies claim that this is only being only occurring to criminals and terrorists, but the report found that this included dissidents, journalists, critics of authoritarian regimes, families of opposition figures, government officials, and human rights activists. Now, admittedly, people like dissidents and journalists are frequently considered to be criminals and terrorists in authoritarian countries. I mean, didn't I think Russia the other day declared the lead singer of Pussy Riot to be a like agent of a foreign power, and also one of their dissident journalists, they claim to be an agent of a foreign power.
Well, they threw that whole band in jail, but like 10 years ago or something.
They did. So if you're, they labeled the whole band foreign agents. So yeah, so that would of course mean that they could surveil them because they're no longer, you know, private citizens with any protections, although I don't know how many protections for those people exist in Russia, but.
Well, any government can label anybody whatever they like in order to do whatever they want against them.
Now, actually, what makes me curious is how does this jibe with the fact that private individuals have purchased these services? Do they assume that these private individuals are private investigators looking into criminals and terrorists on their own secret missions or something?
Are you talking about from the surveillance company, quote unquote?
Yeah, well, the surveillance company said they only do this to criminals and terrorists, but they're allowing private individuals to purchase the surveillance.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
It just seems like a weird inconsistency, unless they're assuming that the private individuals are investigators or have some sort of, I don't know.
Well, they could say that they're government contractors or something like that doing stuff on behalf of a government organization.
Maybe, yeah.
Because there are several... there are many, at least in the United States, government contractors who are private individuals. They have an LLC or whatever attached to themselves, but they're the only employee of that company and they're contractors for the government. So, but you'd think that they would use their LLC in that case. So maybe they wouldn't show up as a private individual. So I'm not sure if that really applies to the scenario. But they could certainly claim that they're acting on behalf of a government organization or a company, though.
I think I found my next job. I'm gonna act as the government cutout for, you know, plausible deniability. And I'm going to take 20% off the top. Despite the fact that the government can call people, you know, criminals and terrorists, companies have also been caught doing shady criminal things before. Big example here is Coca-Cola. Back in the 80s, I believe it was, Coca-Cola had a problem of unions in Central America and South America. And in a weird coincidence, government death squads kept killing Coca-Cola union leaders. It was so weird. I can't imagine why these right-wing authoritarian death squads were supporting Coca-Cola, you know, doing things that made Coca-Cola happy. And I'm sure that the CEO of Coca-Cola wasn't going around saying, kill these union leaders. But, you know, somewhere along the way was, you know, making the insinuation, man, these guys are bad for business. It'd be better if they went away. And somewhere along the line translated that into, well, we should kill them.
That's been going on for, you know, 100 years. You've heard the term Banana Republic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that started with the United Fruit Company. Around the turn of the 19th century, and their dealings with Central American people and getting people killed and overthrowing governments down there.
I mean, and even in the U.S., like union busting and like breaking heads and all the other, it makes me wonder. They talk in this particular article about how it's all, you know, opposition leaders and human rights activists, and it makes me wonder how long until this becomes affordable enough that they start running this on, you know, all the C-levels and then all the VPs and then everybody over a certain level in the company or anybody that has access to sensitive information. Or they start running it on opposition companies, you know, or politicians that oppose their, I mean, they mentioned politicians were being monitored. Like What if it's a company that's monitoring a politician that's opposing something that's good for them and they're looking for blackmail material?
That's actually a good idea. So I wonder if this is actually like a preemptive strike. This is a preemptive strike by Facebook, because what Facebook's going to do is start offering the service via an API.
They're doing it anyways. It just comes straight to us.
Exactly. So what they're doing is they're just getting these people out of the way so that they can have their own service, which is available for companies and countries to use. And they'll open up this API to do that collection.
That would not surprise me. And frankly, in order to actually monitor at the quantity that we're talking about, if they wanted to monitor all their employees, they would need a big API and AI driven program, which of course Facebook could provide. They've been doing all the research.
Right. And actually that's not without precedent either, because all the major phone carriers have web portals for law enforcement to log in to and do phone searches and stuff like that for, supposedly pre-authorized wiretapping and things like that already. They already built that the whole system for law enforcement already to do that. And I think, when it's not a stretch to say that same type of front end is going to be built by the social media companies for at least U.S. government law enforcement. And there's no reason why they can't say, well, we can make a couple more dollars by offering this service to others as well, considering we're an international company.
And since they've got access to all of our chats and everything too, it wouldn't be even further for them to go ahead and, because they're a private company, they don't have to respect our rights to privacy. There's no Fourth Amendment for a private company.
Yeah, it's not like they actually follow their privacy policy either.
Well, they wouldn't have to even sell like the contents of it. They could just sell like an indication, like, oh, so-and-so having an affair. And they could just kind of use their AI to quickly zoom over and be like, pretty strong indications, via their chat or via their friends. Maybe they just recently added you could do all kinds of wacky things there.
Oh, that's genius. Because if you did it that way, not only could you just sell the indicator, you could sell the quality of the indicator at a staged or stepped price model, right? So, if you want an indicator that's over 90% probable, you got to pay more.
I can see that. And this creates, what do they call that in the law enforcement business? Parallel construction. You hear about it from this service from Facebook, and then you go out and find supporting evidence. And then you're like, look, this politician is having an affair and he should resign because his opposition to our request to cut down the rainforest in this country is completely immoral because he's having an affair.
Yeah, actually, parallel construction isn't entirely finding the additional evidence, but developing the narrative where it could have been found somewhere else.
Fair enough.
So yeah, keep an eye on this because I think you're onto something.
This is horrifying.
With that.
This is straight up horrifying. And this makes me want to delete my account. See, I can't. I've deleted most of the content out of my Facebook account, but it's hard to delete out the contacts from people.
I mean, you mean you removed your Facebook content from your ability to see it?
Yeah. No.
You removed it from your view.
I've stopped adding new content. Mm-hmm. So, they've got a pretty good picture of a certain period of my life, but they don't have necessarily anything going forward.
And you've changed, man, how you've changed.
I've gotten so much better looking. All right. Anyways, now off the cynical future view, So I guess really, in terms of trying to tie this back to information security, what happens when you find this on a corporate device? Your CEO got your mobile device management installed on your CEO's phone, and the phone AV triggers, and there's malware on there, there's spyware on there from one of these companies. What do you do?
That's a good question.
I don't have a good answer. Yeah.
I mean, the first thing I would do is you talk to legal counsel.
Yeah.
That would be like step one.
Yeah. And then, because then you have to decide, like, are we doing counterintel? Are we going to feed them bad information? Are we going to just delete it off and then let them know that it's been found?
Yeah. Are you going to keep your mouth shut? Do you involve law enforcement? Could it be law enforcement that's doing it?
Oh yeah, because they work with government clients too. So you don't know if it's private or government or which government. You're a multinational company. It could be, you know, maybe you're starting something up in Africa and the country was like, we want to get information on the deal or something.
Right.
Or they want bribes or I don't know what their motivation would be, but.
Yeah, this is a huge challenge for larger organizations who could be subject to this, because with that cutout, you don't know who's on the other side of the cutout. Could be anybody.
Final question on this before moving on, because I could just, you know, spout paranoid BS about this for hours. Is Facebook the good guy for revealing this, or is Facebook the bad guy? Because they're a big part of how it can happen by, as you said, doing the surveillance initially and making it available.
Yeah. And I think I voiced my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know though. See, part of so Facebook is so useful and Facebook is so ubiquitous. I don't know if you've ever, have you ever tried using something like U-Matrix to block all the tracking and advertisements?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. The modern web just falls apart. Like the majority of your sites stop working. You've got to go through and like individually figure out which sites to add to allow it to work. And
yeah, it's a huge pain in the ass. But if you go to like CNN.com or something, it's like, it almost scrolls off the page, the amount of stuff that's going on. All right, well, that looks like that's all the articles we have for today. Thank you for joining us, and follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.